It's time for Mac Break Weekly. The news is out. You can get your WWDC tickets. We'll have details, a look at the web page, and some ideas about what Apple might be talking about at their yearly developer conference. Good news for fans of Bob's Burgers. And one of our favorite sponsors has been acquired by one of our favorite fruit companies. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 601, recorded Tuesday, March 13th, 2018. Built-in Butterwell. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Molecule. Molecule is the world's first molecular air purifier that reduces symptoms for allergy and asthma sufferers. For $75 off your first order, visit Molecule.com and enter the promo code MACBREAK. And by FreshBooks, it's the easy-to-use cloud accounting software for small business owners. Try it free for 30 days at FreshBooks.com/MACBREAK. And by Rocket Mortgage, by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/MACBREAK. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we talk about the latest Apple news with three of the best. Rene Ritchie from iMore.com. Did you just have an earthquake in Montreal? You have cameras all over the place. Look at all those cameras.
I want to show you and Andy and Alex every week, Leo. This is the end result of that.
Ah, there's a camera over your left shoulder. Wait a minute. Is that an HTC Vive sensor? Or is that over your left shoulder? Yes.
And then there's a top-down camera mount. There's some lights. There's some other. Every time I'm on this show, I buy more cameras.
Technically, the Vives is not a camera. It's
display.
I don't know what it is. No, the little things you put up in the corners of the room.
Oh, the what do they call those? Lighthouses? They're laser sensors?
Yeah, but I don't. They're simpler. They rotate. I know there's moving stuff spinning in there.
They ingest the world. They're a world ingester.
That's what they are. Andy Nocco from the Chicago Sun-Times is here. Hello, Andrew.
Hey there. Hi there. Ho there.
Good to see you again. And from Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, at pixelcore.com, Alex Lindsay, who was just here a few days ago, but now he's back.
I was
in D.C. Nice to see you.
We're getting some studios set up, and so I'm out here for the next couple weeks.
Nice.
Working with the guys.
Nice. Well, all three of you have gathered together to celebrate the. If Apple buys Texture, how long can it be before they buy me? I'm just saying, I'm for sale. Apple.
It's coming
for sale. We don't know how much. Prepare. Texture, our sponsor, which is a Netflix for magazine, $10 a month gives you 200 magazines. Now an Apple property. You said you talked to them about their plans, Rene Ritchie.
I started seeing different reports. Like some reports said that Apple was going to be folded. That Eddie Q had said that Apple was going to be folding it into the news app. And when CNN did not make the video or the audio of it. I mean, for a TV show, they did not make anything available immediately. So I managed to get, thanks to the generosity of some people, managed to get a bootleg copy and very carefully go through it. And the question was very leading.
South by Southwest talk.
Yeah, by Southwest talk with Daryl. And he said, the question was very leading, like, what is Texture going to do for Apple News? And at the end, Eddie talked about the integration of them. And then a lot of people reported that as Apple folding it into Apple News. And when I asked about it, they said, no decisions have been made yet. And that could just be them covering their bases, because maybe that's what they're thinking of doing, but they don't know if it'll work out the way they want, or if the subscription service is more valuable some other place, or if it's going to go in iBooks, because that's going to be iBooks is going to become Books, a whole different app. So there's a lot of possibilities. I think they just want to keep their options open. But they did say a couple of things. One is that they're going to keep all the existing apps going because they have a big subscriber base. They have iOS, Android, Kindle Fire, and Windows. I think Windows 10, but it might just be a generic Windows app. And all of those are going to keep going. And everyone who's going to have the same functionality they've had before. It's only available in the U.S. and Canada, so it's not an international app by any means yet. And it's partly owned by Rogers in Canada. Strange partnerships there.
It was founded by publishers. It was founded by Condé Nast and Hearst. I think Meredith has a stake.
To be a Hulu for magazines, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's easy to see how a lot of the conversation got misconstrued. He was, I thought it was a lot of interesting stuff he was talking about how the point he was making was that it was part of a larger sort of philosophical initiative to talk about the Apple News app as curated news, as a place where at some point some human with an IQ larger than room temperature has looked at this news article and said, okay, this is not garbage. We will let the Apple News app see this. And so he was talking about Texture as magazine content because it's been bought and paid for, because it's not generally news of the last 45 seconds. It's a little bit better vetted, so he felt as though it's a better addition for that larger portfolio of like Apple News and Apple content, as this is a safe place. You can trust what we're talking about right here.
I'm sure it'll be Apple treat it the same way they did PRSS, the digital magazine platform they acquired 3 years ago that was never heard from again.
They had a long record of, there's the newsstand bodies still littering the streets. The Rupert Murdoch property. I'm blanking on the name. Daily.
Oh, yeah, the Daily. But those were shut down by the Daily. The PRSS is probably the closest thing to the Texture acquisition. Apple bought them in September 3 years ago, almost 4 years ago. And if I go now to the PR, can you show my screen? If I go now to the PRSS website, it's a vital and growing concern. No, this website cannot be reached. They just basically took it over and shut it down. So I think all bets are off as to what Apple might do with this. It's clear that Apple doesn't want an app called Texture in its portfolio, does it?
Yeah, I could see that.
Really?
Sorry, go ahead, Alex.
I think one of the things that Apple may try to do, and maybe I'm wishful thinking, so we don't know, but I think that it does give you access to the idea of approaching publishers to possibly add more content that is more interactive into the content that's being distributed. So I think that the big problem, Texture is great. I'm a subscriber. I'm a user, but you still feel like this is still kind of taking an old technology and putting it into your iPad, as opposed to really building content that's designed for that next whatever that next thing is.
How all in is Apple on Apple News? Is that still important to Apple?
I'll
make it very quick. I think that Apple News is not so much the app itself, so much as the conduit. So long as it's part of that dashboard, the first thing you want to look at when you wake up and the thing you want to keep dipping into as the day goes by, I think that's a very important strategic solution for them.
So this would make sense as something that would, as Eddie Q did or did not say. What was the actual quote, Renee?
I actually spent part of the night transcribing it, so I would have it available.
All right.
So the question was, how does acquiring Texture advance the grand strategy of Apple News? And at the very end, Q says that, basically I'll tell you what the whole thing he says is, I think there are a few things that we've always cared about at Apple News. First of all, we wanted to bring great articles from trusted sources in a beautiful layout, and that was the premise of Apple News we started with. If you do that, lots of customers will use it and love it. Obviously, Texture, with the brands I just told you about, they have magazines from Esquire to Vanity Fair to Times to Sports Illustrated, some of the best magazines in the world. They have some incredible content, and content takes a long time to create. So they're in-depth articles, and so we're really excited about bringing that into Apple News to augment all of the other stuff that we have from thousands of other publishers. But the key to our key is curation. We want the best articles. We want them to look amazing. We want them to be from trusted sources so that we don't have a lot of the issues that have been going around in the marketplace.
So I can see why that was synopsized as they're going to fold it into Apple News.
The other point
is Schrodinger's app in several ways. It is Schrodinger's app in several ways because it came out. It launched in the U.S. It quickly went to the U.K. and Australia, and then it stopped. Apple put out Apple Music in 100 countries at the same time, the same day. They haven't done that for News, but they have spent a lot of time improving the features of News. It's got Siri-based machine learning intelligence. They've been doing a wonderful job. Now they're doing March Madness, but they did the Winter Olympics and they did the Oscars. And they've got a huge team of editors. They've hired an editor in chief, and I think what Apple sees is almost like they think they have part of Tim Cook's mandate, and it was Steve Jobs' thing too. They want to save news, which sounds ludicrous on its face, but they look at Amazon and Google and they have these problems where they basically took other people's content and monetized it and sucked all the revenue out of it, and it's destroyed a lot of publishers. They said, come on, we'll put you in newsfeed, we'll put you in Facebook video, and then they turned around and said, oh, sorry, we don't mean it, and those companies went bankrupt. And I think that Apple has almost like an Aaron Sorkin-esque romantic feeling of what news can be and what news should be, and how it can power and inform and create communication. And they want to, as much as they can, use iOS as a platform for doing that, similar to how when they acquired Beats, they used that as a platform to sort of create an all-encompassing music library in the sky.
Yeah, there's advertising came up a lot during that conversation, in which this, when you're getting content from these magazines, you're not necessarily getting content that needs to be subsidized by advertising. This is a point that Eddie Q was making, that whereas stuff that comes online, at some point you have to get people to click, you have to get people to actually imprint an ad on the thing, and this will help to elevate the level of content to have this texture content. It's more complicated than that, however. A lot of you forget about how much newspaper ad revenue came not from people advertising, you know, the things that you see advertised on the web typically, but you're talking about classified ads, you're talking about legal ads, you're talking about just like the weekly supermarket supplement, you're talking about things that would have gone away anyway, unless someone firebombed an LCD plant and made sure that phones and tablets never existed. So it's a little bit more complicated than that, but this is the first time I've heard Apple talk about news as something other than, oh, well, these other people have this app, we're going to have this app too. It's interesting for them to brand it as part of their overall company identity as, look, it's a nightmare out there because of largely because it's ad-based and profile-based content. We're a safe place where you can be. We're not going to tell you that it's the safest. It's objectively no danger of anything happening everywhere, but at least you can trust if you click on an Apple News app that there are fewer shenanigans going on than maybe you would find elsewhere on Facebook and Google.
Is the business model for Texture, is it the same as Netflix, where, or not necessarily Netflix, but let's say a lynda.com or something like that, where everyone getting an equal amount of income, or are they are they getting it like per sub like we would with cable?
They haven't said, or are they haven't said anything.
Views?
Yeah,
because that'd be really
private company, so they haven't disclosed almost anything.
Right, because it's interesting. Yeah. It'd be interesting to know whether it's based on like how many people are reading your magazine, as opposed to like maybe you get a base amount per sub and then a higher amount based on usage. And I'd just be curious, how that looks. But I do think that, you know, what Apple gets access to, depending on how they use it, is a lot of walled gardens. A lot of the content in those magazines is not ending up in Facebook, is not ending up in a lot of these things, because they don't make it available unless you're a subscriber. And so I think that those are things that are now going to be accessible in the news feed that haven't been, and it may increase that. If you feel like you can, publishing through Texture is going to give you a larger market and a sustainable market, you may be more interested in doing that than putting it up on the web.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Particularly basic income for publishers.
But particularly if this deal gives them the launching pad from which to develop deeper relationships with magazines like The New Yorker, with Esquire, because they have deep, deep, deep content. And so we're not just talking about nostalgia buffs who would like to read Frank Sinatra Has a Cold by Harlan Ellison, which I recommend you seek and find out, because it is a hell of an article. But it means that when there's a piece of news, like when Harlan Ellison finally dies, there's going to be lots of obituaries, but here is the place you can find one of his most important pieces of writing, and it will surface right to the top. When there's,
if you look for that one, though, you won't find it. It's Gay Talese. But other than that, yeah.
I'm sorry, my brother.
Well, I would like to read Harlan Ellison's version of that, however.
Oh, no, I forgot because one of the key scenes in that is Harlan Ellison picking a fight with Frank Sinatra.
It's a wonderful article, which everybody should read. So, I don't pretend to have inside knowledge, although because Texture's been a sponsor, we've talked to the founders and we've talked to them before. So, I'm not speaking from inside knowledge, but because it was founded by four big magazines. It's founded by Condé Nast, which owns The New Yorker, and among other things.
Yep.
The Hearst Corporation, which owns a bunch of magazines. Meredith, which owns a bunch of magazines and TV stations. Rogers. Does Rogers own magazines in Canada?
They own everything, Leo.
Yeah. and KKNR, which is an investment company, which probably owns magazines. So, you know, and I do know that they've been adding magazines over time. I'm sure that they have a – when you get the magazine on texture, you get the ads that are in the magazine. So those are not removed. Yep. It'd be my guess that you get some money from it because it's in lieu of a subscription. Right. So I would guess there are payouts to the – I don't know. Again, this is not inside knowledge. But I would guess there are payouts to the magazine companies because – instead of buying the New Yorker subscription, you buy a $10 subscription to Texture and you get the New Yorker. I would guess that the New Yorker's happy to get that buck or whatever because that's at least something. And they still have, and they can add it to their circulation for the advertisers. I just don't see Apple keeping it going because it's orthogonal to what Apple's all up to already. And frankly, I got to say, the news app is far from the best news app on iOS. So Apple needs to do if they care about the news app, they got a long way to go. I mean, it comes on every iOS device, so I guess it's probably got some real traction. But
did
it's
you
not
see the numbers he mentioned? Like he said some things like the New York was it the New York Times or maybe another or CNN? He said was getting something like 60-70% of their views through the news app now.
Yeah, and as you pointed out,
industry changing
since Facebook has really dumped on these guys, they're probably very thrilled to be. You know, of course, you got the stock comment from all the owners saying, oh, we're great. Apple's what a great company to be working with.
we didn't lose our money on the app.
Well, that's the thing. It could very well be that the app is a failure and these app is a failure and that these companies are saying, oh, God, let's just get out of this. Oh, thank God, Apple will take us back. I think
Apple has two things that they could be doing is basically working with these publishers and saying, hey, give us one article, two articles a week, or one article, two articles a month for the Apple News. It's still going to drive people if they want to buy the rest of the magazine to go back.
Yeah, that might be a better pitch.
So now they have access to all these articles that are not available anywhere else on the web except for Apple News. So right now, Apple News is mostly scraping stuff that is non-exclusive. So being able to have exclusive stuff that's only available for Apple News as samples that would then drive back to online subscriptions, I think is one area that could be really interesting for the publishers, as well as I still think that Apple at some point may consider, you know, interactive magazines or interactive content to be something that lets them step iOS ahead of all the other, you know, basically away from Kindle, you know, because Kindle could never keep up with that. And Android would have to build a unified solution to keep up with
it. I'm interested in the model for Apple News. It has big ass banner ads, which I find very repulsive. This is a big banner ad. And then it also seems to love the Huffington Post, which I don't think that's my traffic. That's not generated from my interest, which this supposedly is.
I don't get Huffington Post.
You don't?
I get other
but you're
articles.
In Canada. No, do you guys get Huffington Post? Because I get
no,
a ton
no
of it.
Apple News in, there's no Apple News in Canada, so I have to pretend that I'm in the U.S.
Oh, you don't
to
get
have
it
the
at
app
all.
Running, so it acts like – no, I have an iPhone that is basically set up entirely as if it's a U.S. iPhone, and I have Apple News on there.
I'm just assuming
but
that –
but it does skew towards what you click on and what you – you can set it up initially. My thing with this, though, is I think this is going to be very similar to how they went with Apple Music. They acquired Beats, which had a basic subscription service, and then they build that out so that – because remember, Apple's thing is that there's only a certain amount of iPhones they can sell. Eventually, they'll get to the point where you know, they've saturated a lot of that market, and everything they can do to add value to the iPhone and to get incrementally more revenue from a customer, because Apple now talks about revenue per customer, not just overall revenue. If you get someone to subscribe to Apple Music, if you get someone to subscribe to whatever they end up calling Texture, or even if they just end up calling it Texture, that's $10 more dollars per customer per month. And that provides you stay with Apple because they're giving you all these services. And maybe there's a backlash against bots and against fake news and against social news. And people want to be able to access the newspapers, even if it's nostalgia, the newspapers and magazines that they love. And Apple can offer that as a service and they can grow that out and you'll have your, and then they can make products around it. Like Apple Music powers the HomePod, and who knows what other devices they're working on, but maybe the magazine becomes an integral part of iPad or whatever tablet experience they're working on. It just gives them more content to showcase on their platform. And we're not even talking original content. Like Netflix went from catalog aggregation to original content at some point. Apple's doing that for TV now, but who knows if Apple editorial ever becomes more active like App Store editorial has become, and you start having articles that are chosen and vetted by Apple's team. It becomes very interesting.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Apple is associated with the success of the iPhone, but at some point, people are not going to be wanting iPhones anymore, and they're already being outpaced by other platforms. largely only because of the diversity of hardware that's available to them. The more they, if they want to make money from everybody out there, not just people who are Apple fans, because that's a dead end. At some point, it's not, they're not going to have enough money to do what they want to do. They're not going to have enough money to have the sort of firepower that they want to have. So it really is in their best interest to maintain this as a platform, build out Apple News as a service that like a Pocket, where no matter what kind of device you have, no matter what it's hooked up to, you can still access this content. And if it also helps to funnel people into buying iPads, all the better. I don't think this means by any means that they're going to be shutting down that for any other platform. Because again, Apple, how many times have Apple said that we are really, really, really bullish on becoming a service company? Because again, they are way smarter than we are when it comes to looking at the hardware market. It's going to be a problem if they're just going to be relying on selling premium hardware at 40% markup. So the more if they can get $7 billion to give them a penny each, that adds up.
I for the record, I will say that within 2 years, I think that Texture will only be available on the iOS.
I agree 100%. I don't think it'll take 2 years.
I'm just saying, I'm being conservative. I think by
July. They still have Beats on Android.
They didn't spend billions on it for one thing.
No, but I think the point is that once you have the family plan, it's for the extra, like you have three iPhones in your family, one Android, two iPhones, two Androids, and you get the family plan. It means it's more valuable to you because even the Android people can use it, and it's very little maintenance to keep going. And it is a little bit of, like you're getting more of a taste of the Apple experience. Because Apple Music on Android is not a terrible app. I have it on my Pixel.
Yeah.
I think that you'll get Texture on a non-iOS devices. You just won't know that it's Texture. I think that at some point the branding will go away. I think at some point they'll figure out how to make it into a subscription model through iBooks or even through Apple Music or whatever they rename that to after they realize that people are coming to Apple Music for things other than music. There's still no clarity on where do you go for this new series that that the creator of Bob's Burgers is going to be creating for them. Do they go to Apple Music? Do they go to Apple? Do they go to iTunes? So I think that there's going to be a convergence, not so much of Mac OS or iOS. The more important one is going to be the convergence of their content delivery. And I'd be really surprised if they don't try to make that multi-platform.
If they decide that they want to add more interactivity, they'll kill off all the other ones, because otherwise you end up in lowest common denominator development. And so if they decide just to keep on letting magazines be magazines and be basically 2D things that are on your tablet, then they could probably last a bit longer. But I think that as soon as they decide we want to do something that's different, or to now they have access to all these publishers, and they have possibly they grow to a point where they are the access to the outside world for these publishers, gives them a lot of leverage to go back and do the things that they tried to do when they stalled out. You know, basically they, you know, had no leverage. They went to a bunch of textbook companies and decided that iBooks was not a good market to go into. I still think that there's a massive future in that area. No one has a really good development platform, and I think that this could be something that could lean towards that. But if they decided to do that, then they would get rid of the other platforms pretty quickly, because they're just they're dead weight.
Apple has so much money. They had $50 million in venture funding. It probably didn't cost him more than $100 million, which is really a rounding error for Apple.
Sofa cushions.
Yeah, it's rounding error. Yeah. I think, honestly, they looked at it and they said, this would be great. We could open a conversation with all these publishers. That's all they – I think it's about relationships. I don't think they really I really wonder if they want to be in the content business. I mean, that's what Eddie Q said, but that's his job, right, to be in the content business. I really wonder if they want to be in that business at all.
No, they're spending way too much money to not be interested in what they're buying. I mean,
I doubt this was expensive. I know they're spending a billion on TV.
But also in the same interview, I think he was asked about buying something as big as, let's say, Sony, which they could possibly do. And he basically said that we don't do well buying huge companies that have them then have to sort of dilute Apple. We buy small companies that can make Apple better, make Apple more Apple-y, so to speak.
Exactly.
If the acquisition of Texture is the Mrs. Dash seasoning that makes a bunch of different products better, I think that that's a smart move.
I think it makes sense. Much more like kind of something around that, and. Honestly, I mean, let me ask you guys, what is the best news app on iOS? The reason I'm interested, we covered this on iOS Today earlier.
It's the New York Times app.
So that's single publisher. How about you, Alex?
Every morning for the last five or six years, I use Flipboard. As you know, it's a little bit old to you, but to me, it's like the usage of it and the way it works and everything else totally works for me.
No, in fact, I started using Flipboard again. Lisa, my wife, said, you should really try Flipboard. It's great. And she's right. And it's everything Apple News could be, but isn't, in my opinion. What do you like, Renee? I know you're in Canada, so that maybe jaundices you a little bit. You can't really get Apple News officially. That's too bad.
No, I start off with Apple News, and then I also go through Flipboard and I go through Nuzzle. Although, like, that's changed a lot because, again, being in Canada, maybe Americans are as tired of it or feel as powerless as I do that a lot of the social news is just not stuff I want to read.
Yeah, this is actually probably not a good time to ask this question because for the last year, news has been very much tilted in one direction, thanks to our president. And it gets kind of monotonic. It's boring after a while. You want to read something different. Maybe Apple News is good.
We also see the opposite effect from that. I mean, like, our traffic is greatly skewed now because people never used to read about politics. They used to read about technology. It was fun. And now everyone's reading about politics. Yeah. And they're not reading about technology.
I would say the same thing's happening in technology podcasts. Actually, all podcasts that aren't about Donald Trump. So that's what they're reading right now. That shifts back and forth. I mean, texture is really only a small part of the conversation. The larger conversation is what is Apple's thinking and where are they going and why these content acquisitions? So it doesn't really matter whether texture lives or dies under Apple's wing as much as it's an indicator of what Apple's up to.
I will tell you this, Lolio, is that when I opened up Texture to talk about it yesterday, right front and center was the entertainment article about Avengers Infinity Wars. And I would probably not have seen that because I don't go to newsstands anymore and it wouldn't have shown up.
And you read it cover to cover, I'm sure.
It is so long, so in-depth, and it's presented like it is in the magazine. And I know that's – like the interface is not great. Sometimes you page sideways to go through stories. Sometimes you page up and down, like, and it should always be consistent. And sometimes it does look like a bit of a rendered PDF, and other times it's fine. I mean, I put up with comic book interfaces that are sometimes just as bad, if not worse. But it was just having it there. And again, I gave Texture to my mom for Christmas, and she loves it because she was buying
product.
All these magazines.
Yeah, the people who use it are going to be very upset if Apple doesn't continue it. But can anybody think of an app that Apple has acquired and then continue to run as a standalone app?
FileMaker?
Workflow, most recently.
Yeah.
Workflow. Yeah, and I'm wondering how long that has for this world.
Well, it'll eventually become Siri.
They bought Workflow for the engineers. They didn't buy Workflow for the app.
Well, no, I think that their lack of – they're pivoting away from AppleScript and other like 1980s style scripting environments and towards something a little bit more modern and visual. I think that's very, very much in line.
So maybe it is the app. Yeah.
Yeah. They absolutely need automation. Most of the people we talk to on the show are individual users, but there are people who need to set up 400 iOS devices at the same time, or they need to wipe.
There are examples of applications like as you mentioned, Andy, and there's Logic and Final Cut that Apple purchased and kept going as applications. ClarisWorks, FileMaker for sure. But what about apps? Like, what about iPhone and iPad apps? Is there much of a history of that? I think Workflow might be the exception that proves the rule, frankly. Yeah.
It is an exception. A lot of them, they do hire for the talent, and then those like they bought Color, and that team went and redid the photo app.
There's far more apps that Apple bought the company and then killed the app.
Well, I mean, right. Siri, famously, right?
Siri, yeah. There's actually an article.
But again, Beats became the Apple Music app. It's just it's not Beats anymore, but it's a very similar app, and it's still on Android.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense because they needed a streaming music app, and they had eschewed streaming music for so long, they really had nothing.
And they need subscription and services revenue, which is why I think that they'll keep this going in some form or another.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. I mean, there's only so many things
you can get people subscribed to, and they didn't buy Comixology.
It goes along with music. Right. It goes along with TV. Along. So it's just another content stream that people will subscribe to. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
We'll talk about Apple and their unlimited funds because their market cap now is $916.2 billion. And a number of people have talked about the fact that they may well be soon the first $1 trillion company in
history. Trillion with a T?
Do we want to lay a bet on on when?
Well, we've been talking about this for months, right? We thought it'd get there before this.
Was it Christopher Mims on Twitter yesterday who said all Apple has to do is put the word blockchain on a press release and they'll be there tomorrow?
MKBH.
It can mine Bitcoin.
MKBHD had the tweet of the moment in his tweet. He said, Apple, let me see if I can find it. I'm scrolling now. Apple's cap, fun fact, Apple's cap is closing in on $1 trillion. If you had $1 trillion, you could literally buy every single NFL, NBA, and MLS team, Ford, NASA, and 100,000 Teslas and still have money left over, but you couldn't buy Apple. But what's interesting to me about this is 154,000 likes and 38,000 retweets. Obviously, this has captured people's imagination.
I'm gonna guess June 1st.
June 1st. Why June 1st?
Because it's the Friday before WWDC.
Oh, and we know that now because Apple has announced that WWDC is coming up March. What was it? June 4th.
June 4th through 8th.
Yeah, that's good.
You can apply, I think, until March 22nd. Is that right?
You can register. So can you register
now? That's like Game of Thrones artwork as passed through Johnny Ive's lab and got like just totally white coated.
Yeah, it's going to be the whitest WWDC ever. Don't worry, there will be no joy.
You can go to apple.com/WWDC. It's all updated.
This is Zach Hall's video. Is that from Apple? That's nice. What is the Apple WWDC?
Apple.com. I believe. I think it's apple.com/WWDC.
It looks like it, doesn't it? So for people who are listening, it's got the 3D stuff rising up. Ooh, I love that. Oh, maybe Zach made it animated.
That would have taken a while. I don't know if he even needs that.
Where did he find it? Yeah.
It wouldn't be hard to do that.
Maybe he did that because it's not animated on the Apple page. Because I'm using Google Chrome, it won't do that for me. That's probably why.
I mean, once you have all the basic assets, it's like a couple keyframes and then you and a light.
Oh, stop it, you show off. Now,
I'm just saying, it's not.
There's a more button, there's an app icon.
Let's read the tea leaves here.
You're not bidding on this job. It's been done.
What's the orb thing? Yeah. The orb thing is throwing me.
Which orb thing? Where?
The big circle in the top left.
The floating orb of the top.
Ooh, that's augmented reality, baby.
Is that Siri?
Or maybe VR.
Material design.
This is very skeuomorphic 3D design. I love the teardrop windows. And, yeah, this is it's just all of Apple's controls, right, in a kind of 3D form.
But it's interesting. You look at the above that, Bob, you see a 3D bounding box bounding box for a 3D object. That's up particularly here. Cool. Yeah. Interesting, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, this is what we do. We dissect every last thing in these static images. And I know it's silly, but it's fun.
That's all we have.
Well, Leo, if you go to apple.com/newsroom, they have the announcement up there, and it lists some of the things we're going to see, and including the OSs. They have SiriKit, HealthKit, and HomeKit right up front.
One of the things I think will be interesting for WWDC is whether we see, you know, Apple so far has put out ARKit, but will they put out an AR development platform? Like something like a Motion for AR would explode the usage. You know, if people could actually drag and drop something and build AR solutions.
So here they are.
Right now it's a bit of a lift.
SiriKit, HomeKit, HealthKit, GymKit.
GymKit is what lets you tap your Apple Watch against gym equipment and it automatically syncs your workouts.
Oh, that's cool. Music Kit, Research Kit, Core ML. That's the machine language stuff, right? Machine learning stuff.
Yeah.
Not machine language. There is a difference.
It's like PDF for machine learning.
Yeah. Very cool.
AR Kit. Yeah.
So I guess that means we're going to have a big keynote on June 4th. And we're still waiting. We talked last week about that March rumor that there would be announcements in March. It's as we get now midway through March, it gets less likely, right? It looks like maybe we should wait.
As soon as it started sounding like the iPads wouldn't be ready in time for March, it makes a March event very hard. Like they could still do something like briefings or a red version of iPhone or something. But if the iPads are going at WWDC, it doesn't sound like there's much use for a full event in March.
All right.
Big advantage to getting it as close to announcing them and being able to take pre-orders as close to April as possible, because that's when a lot of money gets committed for usage at the end of the year. So,
And it's also weird to announce WWDC before an event. They did it last time because they were actually moving locations, but typically you wouldn't want to overshadow one event with another.
So how did Zach Hall... This actually looks like it's on the Apple page, this video. So maybe they just, maybe they stopped doing that to save bandwidth or something. Maybe it was, if you first got there, it was that way.
See, well, it's an autoplay video. Maybe they didn't want to run a file of Google's new ad blocker. Right now.
Front page ad blocker. Let's take a break.
I mean, Alex could knock that out right now.
Yeah, come on, Alex. Can you get that before the end of the day?
I went to the webpage.
He's already putting together a slide deck.
Maybe Safari. Maybe I need to do it in Safari.
Yeah, I went there in Safari. Did it right away.
Oh, it's a Safari thing. You just wouldn't understand.
It does it on my Chrome. It's working on my Chrome.
Oh, well, why is it? Maybe. Oh, you know what? I have all these blockers going. It's probably a blocker.
Steve Gibson is standing there holding it down, preventing it from enemy.
I have so many blockers on my.
Yeah, it's working on. I've got it on Firefox. It's running on fine.
It's just me.
Just hey, look at Granddad running Chrome. Woo!
Maybe if I turn off my ad blocking.
I'm sure it would work in Opera or Sleipnir.
Sleipnir. I need to use Sleipnir.
Or Fenris. I forget. There's just so many Norwegian. Right.
So I don't have the animation.
I got links open in a terminal.
It's working in links.
I will say now that I'm watching it on the screen, it's quite nice.
I know. I want it. Let's see. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm gonna do it on your phone, Leo. Do it on your phone.
I'm gonna break down and use Microsoft Edge. See, I can't, unfortunately I'm on.
It'll be so happy that you launched it.
And it's being built with service workers, Leo. The service workers are down there building each pixel by hand.
I'm embarrassed to say I'm using a Windows machine on a MacBreak Weekly. Now let's see if it oh, stop it. Oh, yeah. It works in Edge. Oh, that's hysterical. Just not on my Chrome. It's probably all the ad blockers I've got.
Yeah.
That's nice. That's really pretty. Yeah.
It's got a little pop effect to it. Like it does a little bit of that stretch and bounce stuff like you see in classic animation.
Actually, you know what it is? I have autoplay blockers for video on my Chrome because I hate autoplay video. And that's obviously what this is. Although for good, not evil.
It's nice. For surprise and delight, not for annoyance.
Surprise and delight.
Frustration.
Now the question is, how many other websites are we going to see have this design within the next 2 or 3 months? Usually, this is how we ended up with the little bubbly, the little shiny bubbles.
I know. Apple is very influential.
It's for the little people after last
they've
year.
They've done videos on their
Aqua 2018.
It's not web objects, though, probably, right? What was the Apple?
Probably HTML.
No, this is that
Apple
video.
Technology. The
video tag.
All right, go ahead. Look at the source, and we'll get back to you. Actually, maybe I could download the QuickTime movie. That would be that's the way to do it. A lot of people are saying it's working with Chrome, so it's just my Chrome. But I have
CSS Transform.
I have a lot of stuff. Is it CSS Transform?
No, I don't know. I'm just joking. It's all made out of ASCII characters and CSS Transform.
Could very well be. Could very well be. Our show today brought to you by Molecule. We got a Molecule running in here. Smell how good the air is in here. We got the Molecule for the house some months ago. I think we're 6 months in, something like that. Because Lisa was getting allergies. We live in the country, and we get a lot of pollen and dust and stuff in the house. And she would wake up every morning with a headache, and she didn't know what to do. So we got a Molecule. It's the world's first molecular air purifier. It goes way beyond what a HEPA filter will do. HEPA filter is basically 1960s technology. It's antiquated, and actually 1940s. Wow, 1940s, and they're really until now there hasn't been much innovation since then. But now Molecule uses something called PICO, photoelectrochemical oxidation, that goes way beyond what a HEPA filter system could do to capture and eliminate allergens, also mold, bacteria, even little things like viruses and airborne chemicals, volatile organic compounds. Pollutants 1,000 times smaller than those a HEPA filter can capture. When we put it in, and the next day, Lisa woke up, no headache, and she hasn't had a headache since, except for, and this was actually a kind of good blind test. We were away, and her nephew was staying in our bedroom and had turned off the Molecule. We got home the next morning. She slept in our bed the next morning. She woke up with a headache. She said, "What? I got a headache again." And we looked, and the Molecule had been turned off. It works. It makes it easier to cope with all kinds of allergies and asthma, and significantly reduces symptoms. One Happy Molecule customer said for the first time in 15 years she'd been able to breathe through her nose. Funded by the EPA research, extensively tested by real people, and verified by third parties in university laboratories like the University of South Florida's Center for Biological Defense and the University of Minnesota's Particle Calibration Laboratory. We love our molecule. We have it running in the background in silent mode, so it's always cleaning the room. It's beautiful, too. A sleek design, solid aluminum shell. It's kind of the Apple of air purifiers. And one thing I love, you don't have to, but you can pair it to your phone. They have apps on Android and iOS. If you pair it to your phone, the molecule will let your phone know its filters are, you know, down like to 85 or 90%. And the phone app will order new filters, and they just arrive and say, okay, here, you can put your new filters in. It is really cool. I really like, you don't have to use Wi-Fi. It's not an Internet of Things device. You can turn off the Bluetooth and Wi-Fi capabilities. It works just fine. It's got controls on the top, beautiful controls, touch controls on the top. But I use the phone app because I just like that ability to, automatically get the filters. In fact, we just got some, and I was ready to put them in, and I didn't get around to it that evening. Lisa put them in. It's easy. Look at this, airborne VOC destruction. Things like paint fumes, hydrocarbons in the air from gasoline and other poorly combusted fuels, from 100% to practically nothing, thanks to the molecule. It's an amazing device. We love it. $75 off your first order. We always have a deal for you. All you have to do is go to molecule.com and enter the promo code MacBreak. That's molecule with a K, MOLEKULE.com. And the promo code MacBreak. I talked to the founders and inventors. I was really impressed. Great scientists who really wanted to make something that worked for their families. Let it work for your family. Molecule.com. Use the promo code MacBreak for $75 off your first order. We bought one in our bedroom. We bought one for the studio because we were having problems. They would tar the roof and it would filter right down in here. And then there was the fires in the Sonoma County. It was really smoky in here for a while. And then we got one for Michael's bedroom too. So we got molecules all over. We love them. All right. You got your lapel mic on. You're very fancy there, Alex Lindsay. You got like, you're like your Mr. TV show.
It's a insert studio. It's what it's designed for.
So we got one bet.
Spend a lot of time tuning it.
Was it Alex that bet by June that Apple would cross a trillion?
Q1.
June 1.
June 1.
That's Apple's Q3.
I think so, yeah.
Or Q4, June, July, August. No, Q3. What do you think? Anybody? Will it happen soon? Will it happen at all? World's ninth largest company by revenue.
I mean, it has to happen eventually. It keeps creeping up.
Yeah. Let's look at the 1 year. Yeah, see? That's a pretty steady upward growth. It's not, it's not perfect. But if you were to draw a line, March 14th last year was $138. Now it's at $180. I think I could see them. Here's the really good one. The 5 year.
It'll cross, then it'll go back down, then it'll cross again.
I know. Well, people sell off as soon as it gets close, right? You get these sell-offs.
There'll be a rumor. There'll be an event.
Yeah. $916 billion. That's plenty good. That's just a odometer number, right? We don't care about this.
This isn't a sarcastic question, but what will it mean when it becomes a $1 trillion company, when it becomes a $1.2 trillion company, when it becomes a $1.5 trillion company?
I remember, and I think it might even have been while we were doing this show when we were talking about being a $2 billion company. We've come a long way, baby.
Will they ever sell more than 10 million iPhones?
Right. It's kind of more stuff like that. Let's talk more about the Eddie Q interview, because I'm glad to hear you transcribed it. This was Eddie at South by Southwest, and it was a pretty wide-ranging conversation. So, Renee, none of us have actually seen it unless you were at South by, but you got a pirated copy of it.
I haven't transcribed all of it. I listened to all of it, but I only transcribed the part about texture because that was the part I was super interested
Here's
in.
Here's the Apple News story. Apple News, according to Eddie Q, Apple News users followed an average of 4 publications a year ago. Now that's up to 20. That shows people are using it. Or they're desperate to just make it work.
CNN has two video excerpts up now, Leo. They have one about texture and Netflix, and I forget what the second one is about, but they have two about 2 minute long videos up.
Oh, good. Okay. He was asked, so was this a CNN event or just a regular South By event? Or
It was promoted as CNN, but the Dylan Byers,
who's a CNN interview, host, right?
But he does a newsletter. I mean, all the promotion is going in the Pacific, which is his new newsletter. So I couldn't tell if it wasn't televised because it was a newsletter event. So
right.
It was very.
he said
if it was recorded, it would have been aired in some form.
Byers asked him about the NRA TV app on Apple TV. Q said, "It falls into Apple guidelines today, but if it changes while it's in the App Store, it can be removed. We also have pro-gun control apps in our App Store. And, of course, the App Store won't let you buy or sell guns."
There was a really, really good quote he said when they asked him about the difference between Apple News and Google and Facebook. And I'll read a little bit of it because it was super good. He said, "Look, it's always hard to sit from the outside and talk about others. I do know that for ourselves, when we got into this, we think you have to have a large platform. There's a lot of responsibility. We've always taken a great deal of responsibility for our platform, starting with iTunes, the music store, the App Store, certainly Apple News and podcasts." So he said they had guidelines. People weren't happy with the guidelines. But he said the other part is that nobody is completely free. There is no such thing as free. There's no pornography on any of these sites. People draw a line and you can decide where you want to draw that line. We do think free speech is important, but we don't think white supremacy is free speech. That's important.
When asked about the Apple original series deals they'd made, he says, "We're all in on entertainment, but it's about quality, not quantity." He also said, kind of cryptically, "There's a technology angle that will be a surprise when we add it to our service." This is
I think he was talking about how they were going to surface all of this content and they're thinking of ways. Yeah.
"We don't know anything about making television," Eddie says. Yep. "But we did. It took 2 years, but we found the right team to lead the effort." Those are those Sony guys that they hired. About 40 people working in original content at Apple right now.
The 2 to 8 minutes of video, because they asked him, said that Jeffrey Katz, I think it was Jeffrey Katzenberg, was working on a 2 to 8 minute video service, and if that was revolutionary, and Eddie responded, "That's YouTube. There's nothing new about that."
Right.
Some shows, some formats are better to have like 30 minutes or 60 minutes or 2 hours because you can have rich character development and tell more elaborate stories, and other things are good for smaller 2 to 8 minute intervals, but he doesn't think one is going to kill the other.
He says, "Car reviews, it's fine, not for what we want to do."
Yeah, remember that Apple rarely comes into a market thinking that we're going to kill this competitor's product. It's basically, well, again, we're not going to beat we have $1 trillion, but we're not going to beat YouTube at being YouTube because they're doing that extremely well. So we're going to do long form. We're going to bring people into the house there, and we're making money based on 30-minute videos. Whereas with Google, it's more important for people to be consuming lots and lots and lots of content because more content means more commercial breaks, so to speak.
They also said that Apple because Apple's not dependent on advertising revenue, he suggested that Facebook and Google are incentivized to give you more of the same all the time because they're desperate to keep your attention because they want you to watch or to be there for as long as possible, where Apple can do things like show you things that you might not have thought that you'd like, things that are serendipitous, and they're not worried about losing you because they're not making revenue off keeping you locked on.
Yeah, that was one quote that really didn't strike home with me because YouTube, for instance, is all about trying to figure out what you would like to see next to keep you tuned in. Not so much we're going to keep loading your screen with crap and more crap and more crap. It's YouTube is good has its algorithms down good enough to understand that I started watching a lot of car videos a couple of years ago. But within short order, it figured out that, oh, he's not like a big fan of like cars and engines. He likes engineering. He likes shows about people building things and solving problems. And so it does recommend interesting engineering solutions through cars. It will not show me Nürburgring crash videos three times a day. So that's one area where I didn't
recommendation engines are notoriously bad. Actually, Zeynep Tufekci had a very good op-ed piece in the New York Times on Sunday, in which he said, really, it's been her experience that YouTube gets more extreme. So if you watch left-wing videos, you're going to end up getting recommendations for conspiratorial podcasts and videos about secret government agencies and the 911 theories. If you watch right-wing stuff, you're going to get more and more extreme right-wing stuff. And I kind of agree with her that the algorithm seems to... this is her quote, "have concluded that people are drawn to content that is more extreme than what they started with. it certainly is.
Extremism is sticky.
Yeah, it's certainly one way to get people to watch more is to kind of ramp it up. And it certainly explains why the content on YouTube is increasingly extreme. You know, you look at people like Logan Paul, they just have to go farther and farther each video. I don't know if there's, but the problem is YouTube doesn't reveal its algorithm, and this can only be an anecdote.
Yeah, I think we've been talking about that. I think we've been talking about media becoming more and more extreme since reality TV started.
Yeah, you
I mean,
bet.
I think that
sensationalism is nothing new on television. Well, since, you know, start with Morton Downey Jr. and
Well, since Hearst and yellow journalism.
And yellow journalism in the newspapers. You're right.
Yeah, and I think that as far as the algorithms go, I mean, what I'm amazed at, I'm almost never touched by them. Like, I go in to look for something, I go watch it, and then I leave. And so it's very rare for me to, I mean, with YouTube TV, I might leave it on a lot because it's just on and then it's like a TV in the background. But with YouTube itself, I'm there to find something. My kids, on the other hand, I watch them. They can watch Saturday morning for 2 or 3 hours and all they're doing is autoplay. Like, they just sit there and it just plays one video after the other. And they sit there and I would interrupt them, but most of it is like how to build stuff and educational stuff. Like, I walked in on Saturday morning and they were watching breakdowns of how DNA is created and how it separates into its RNA and everything else. And I was like, yeah, they can keep on watching that if they want. So I'm surprised at how long they can just sit there and they don't ever touch the controller. They just sit there and just let it just kind of drone along. It's on Apple TV, and so it's probably more difficult for them to find something new anyway.
Technology, says Eddie Q, in and of itself is not for good. The people that make technology have to make it for good. Okay. A lot of what he said, very on point. You know, he's an Apple executive. He's not gonna wander off the reservation. He did mention the heart study with the Apple Watch, which we talked about last week. That's pretty cool.
Yep.
There will be a new medical records feature in iOS 11.3 and new Apple Watch activity rings.
Activity rings?
New rings. Oh,
rings.
Congratulations.
Right. All like old rings are invalid.
No, not that kind of ring. The, you know, the
there was
circles.
A whole product line I was missing.
Yeah, the circles. Yeah. As for Apple Music, he says we have 38 million subscribers, 8 million trial users. So they're creeping up. They're getting bigger and bigger. 38 million is a significant number at this point.
Yep.
I think Spotify's 71 million, right?
Mm-hmm. Do we remember the time when the record industry said they weren't going to make any money from subscriptions? Because I remember them talking about that.
Yes.
and they just couldn't get their head around the idea that, well, everyone's going to be subscribing and then you'll make money at it. And it really is. It's well over 50% of their revenue now.
Actually, there's a great article in the Daily Dot today on hacking Spotify's playlists and actually pay for play. Plugola is back, even though it's against the rules in Spotify. A lot of artists are now finding influencers and paying to get on their playlists. That's a very effective way. Remember, Alex, you worked as a music director, how they would come to you and say, if you were to play our record in high rotation, it could be worth your while. This was called Plugola, and it was a big problem. It's illegal, and it was a big problem in the music, in the radio industry. I think maybe Spotify's got a Plugola problem.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what they really need to do is figure out a way that the folks making the playlists where it would be able to make some money on it. I mean, I think that they should be getting remunerated for the influence that they're providing. So when you don't do that, you're creating an environment for that to happen. So, you know, them getting some small percentage, I mean, if they have 100,000 people downloading, you know, and people are watching or X number of downloads, they should be getting some kind of money because they're providing the service that the record company would otherwise, which the record company is obviously willing and the artists are willing to pay for.
Well, here's the quote from the Daily Dot. The black market for Spotify playlists is booming. It's cheaper than you might expect to hack the system, and if it's done right, it more than pays for itself. So I know we've always said that artists don't get much money from streaming, but they're getting enough to where they're starting to cheat it.
Yeah, and I think that rather than there's a couple things that Spotify could do that would, you know, allowing people to build radio shows that incorporated the music where they're not actually streaming them, they're just simply being able to talk between them and then play and do
that
those kinds
cool.
of things and allowing them to do advertising that and they could run their own ads, you know on their show, you know, on Spotify. would definitely, you know, basically be the end of radio. I mean, that would be like if you were able to actually do a show, you know, where it's more than your playlist. You're able to talk in between and have a bunch of things. You know, it would there'd be, well, yeah. Why would you listen to radio at that point?
Yeah.
Well, that's part of the problem. Just as we're starting to see TV shows trending more towards nostalgia, we're seeing movies that got TV shows that got canceled in the 90s being revived because it's the people who were kids who grew up on those shows who are still watching television, whereas people who there are people who did not grow up in the habit of turning on the TV and just letting things play. So that's gonna change radio. That's we're already seeing why.
I think it already happens.
Exactly. I was gonna say that's why conservative talk radio. Really took off because, again, it's mostly old people who are listening right. to radio and people who are very susceptible to the world out there is scary. You don't understand it. And it's full of danger that you can't combat. Please buy our vitamin supplements.
Here's the example. Rap Caviar. This is a playlist on Spotify that has 8 million followers. Yeah. 60 songs. So if you get on this playlist, that's huge. You're gonna. Yeah. People are gonna hear your song.
Is it one playlist that they're just constantly refining?
Yeah.
They're constantly changing?
So it's like it's exactly what you were talking about. It's like a radio station. It doesn't have a DJ, but if you follow mm-hmm. this playlist, it's updated all the time. And if you can get on this playlist somehow, that would be really good. 8 million people would be likely to hear your song. You'd get 8 million streams. That pays for itself.
Yeah. It's hard. We got to find a balance point for it. It's Instagram, I think, shows the way of you have people who started out creating Instagram feeds based on their interests, based on fun. They wake up one morning and find out they have 500,000 subscribers. And if someone offers you $5,000 to mention a product, of course, you're going to take it because most of us come from immigrant parents and grandparents who would rise from their graves and kill us if we could make $5,000, as much money as they spent in their first homes, by doing exactly 18 seconds worth of work. And the other end of that is that, remember that if you created a Spotify playlist that's 100 that a million people are interested in, you are working for Spotify. You're just not getting paid for it. So there has to be a way of when your hobby becomes profitable for other people, you need to be have your thumb in the till.
Alex, you remember?
Well, you just need to be able to.
Alex,
able
you
to
remember
do it.
The Loop in Chicago, one of the great classic rock stations of all time. My friend Steve Dahl.
Hey, Steve Dahl show. Steve
his
Dahl,
last
Hello.
Show.
Hello.
On Randy the Loop.
Hey there.
The Loop is shutting down and going here, Christian like rock.
Been caught having sex with a porn star or something. Mm-hmm.
This is what's happening. Radio stations are struggling. The radio company I work for, Clear Channel, they syndicate my tech guy show, Chapter 11. Cumulus, which owned The Loop, struggling. I think they also declared bankruptcy. You got to think that it's digital, it's Spotify, it's other ways to get music, right? I hope it's podcasts too.
That is definitely radio is definitely on its on its last legs.
And that's,
I don't think that there's any
that's streaming. Right?
I still think what radio leaves when radio goes away, which it's going to do my parents don't even listen to radio anymore. You know, so as it goes away, I think the void that's still left that isn't being solved by Spotify or Apple Music is still contextual information. You know, so how do I – like, for instance, a good example is even NPR. I listen to NPR every day. I never listen to it on the radio ever because I would never want to listen to it in the order that they gave it to me in. You know, I'm on the NPR app and I get Morning Edition and
you
I get
listen
my,
to Talk.
Whatever I missed.
Yeah, Talk has survived. Podcasting is assaulting Talk as well.
What I was going to say is that then I reorder all the shows and then I listen to it, but I still want to listen to what people have to say. I think that.
That's what podcasts are for.
Absolutely, but I think that there are people who want to listen to music and understand. Like, if there were shows that had, you know, interviews with some of the artists and so on and so forth, I think some of the people who are really big fans would really like that. There's just no good, easy way to do that inside of these platforms, and I think that's something that radio hasn't done for a long time. I mean, ever since they went to programmed music, you almost never get actual interviews with the bands anyway. I mean, you have a handful of holdovers like KBCO and Boulder that still has, you know, Studio C and still has, you know, a lot of those things. And I think that's what makes them relevant. I think that if you're not doing something different, if you're just doing, you're just doing programmed radio, why would I listen to that? You know, like that, like Pandora does that. So if you're just doing, you know, and it does it better for me than a radio station, you have to figure out how that radio station is going to provide something that's distinct, or Spotify, to close the loop, has to figure out how to reproduce those last little vestiges. It doesn't, wouldn't be hard for them to do and wouldn't take away from their business. It'd probably just add another couple million listeners.
According to WLUP.com, the loop lives on digital. I mean, if you're going to do a radio station, why have a tower anyway, right?
Yeah. Well, the hardest part is all the licensing for the music is the hardest part of why people don't go online.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the math that they created doesn't make any sense. That's why we don't have radio stations that are if you're an existing radio station and you're streaming, your licensing is completely different than if you're streaming only.
Yeah. Let's see. Let me take a break, and we'll have more in just a second. Lots more stories. AirPods 2, perhaps. New entry-level Mac notebook, perhaps. I love all these rumors. A new Apple keyboard that can't be defeated by crumbs, perhaps. That will be welcome.
That's a patent. iPad Pro keyboard is like that already.
Yeah.
It's a patent they need to implement
soon. I hear so many people losing their 2016 MacBooks because, you know, they're very fragile compared when something.
Well, so that's the hilarious thing is that keyboard was designed to prevent ingress from particles, but the problem is that they still get in and now they can't get out.
Egress.
Yes.
Not good for egress either.
As far as I'm concerned, that's like taking a dog that pees all over the house and saying, good news, we trained it not to drink out of the toilet. Okay, it's an improvement. He's still going to the pound tomorrow, but okay.
Show today brought to you by FreshBooks, the cloud accounting system for freelancers who want to spend more time doing what they love and less time creating invoices, tracking expenses, pestering slow pays. FreshBooks is awesome. Tax season's coming, and I bet you, as we get closer to tax season, a few of you are saying, I wish I'd started using FreshBooks last year. Now's the time. Start using it this year for next year's tax season. FreshBooks gives you all the information your bookkeeper, your tax preparer, or you, if you're doing it yourself, needs to do your taxes. But more than that, every day of the year, you'll know, have I made money? Who owes me money? How much money's come in? It's a great dashboard. It starts by making professional-looking invoices. That's how I started using FreshBooks. It solved my invoice phobia. I was able to get them out in time. And by the way, here's something interesting. You get paid faster if you send invoices. Save time accepting credit cards online with FreshBooks. And those online credit card payments, which, by the way, you get immediately as soon as you sign up for FreshBooks, mean your client is more likely to pay quickly. On average, according to FreshBooks, twice as fast. Plus, you don't have to go to the bank with the checks. You don't have to chase clients for payments. You'll always know which invoices have been sent, which have been paid, which haven't been paid, which have been viewed and not paid. It's easy to send out gentle and increasingly annoying notices. You owe me money. Send me money. But you're not going to need to because people pay faster with FreshBooks. It's a lot easier for them and it's a lot easier for you. FreshBooks always adds new features too, but it started with the invoices. But of course, in the process of doing invoices, then you're doing expenses in there, T&A, or just the expenses by clicking, you know, a picture in your app, FreshBooks app on your iPhone or Android phone, and then it goes into the FreshBooks invoice. But you also, that's capturing expenses, right? So now you know income, you know expenses, you know how much money you've made. You have a dashboard that really has all the information you need, including all the reports you'll need for tax time and accountants whenever you need them. FreshBooks makes it easy to build for time and hours. You could do it by client or even by project and have different prices for different projects with the same client. There's multilingual, multi-currency support. They just added Spanish and Dutch languages. And they have all the currencies in there. That's one of the reasons I used it. I was billing them in Canada. It made it a lot easier to bill them in Canadian dollars. Payment schedules can be set up from the FreshBooks iOS app, so you can see, and you can now see attachments if you've made proposals on existing proposals. They've got a very rich array of push notifications on iOS, so you can be, for instance, notified when a client hasn't viewed the invoice. Hey, you know, you sent that invoice last week, nobody's looked at it. When a client comments, when an invoice is overdue, lots more. Set yourself up for a stress-free tax season next year with FreshBooks. You've been meaning to do it. Now's the time to do it, so you'll be ready for next April. From payment reminders to late fees, automate as much or as little as you'd like to and get back to doing what you love at FreshBooks. Try it free for 30 days. FreshBooks.com/MacBreak. FreshBooks.com/MacBreak. Make sure you tell them, I heard it on FreshBooks. I mean, I heard it on the MacBreak. If you say I heard it on FreshBooks, it's not going to do any good. Say I heard it on MacBreak when they ask you, how did you hear about us? FreshBooks.com/MacBreak. 30 days free. We thank them so much for their support of MacBreak Weekly. So that patent isn't a manna from heaven when it comes to the crummy keyboards on the new Mac notebooks. That's just a patent, not a fix.
I don't think anyone wants crumbless keyboards high on their list. They just want the old keyboards.
Just make it easy to fix. Yeah. A new keyboard would be great. We're still seeing rumors. Here's a new one from Mac Rumors. New entry-level Mac notebook expected to adopt Retina display. Likely launch at WWDC in June. Oh, I hope. This is from Digitimes, which is, I don't know, what about 50-50? I don't know how accurate Digitimes is, but they say a new 13.3-inch entry-level MacBook. We're on the second MacBook, but they haven't really changed it much, have they? I'd love to see another.
No,
port.
I mean, and I think the wish was that this would, that the MacBook 12-inch would fall down to the $999 price point and replace the MacBook Air the way the MacBook Air replaced the previous white MacBook, but that just never happened. It remained an expensive product to make, and the Intel Core M processor remained suboptimal for a lot of tasks that you want in a general purpose computer. And so the Air stayed because it had a real core i5 or i7 processor, had a bunch of ports, had a lot of things that people find useful at that price point, and it had that price point. And I think Apple's realized that they painted themselves into a MacBook corner the way they painted themselves into a Mac Pro corner, and a modernized Air is probably a better product at that price range.
So, yeah, I'm not clear if this is an Air or a MacBook. They're saying MacBook. It is a 13.3-inch panel. It's the same resolution. And now they would probably know this because they're in the supply chain business, right? Digitimes. So a 13.3-inch ASI panel, same size and resolution as the MacBook Pro 2560 by 1600 from LG. It says LG will begin supplying the panel in April. So Digitimes, I think, is now projecting mass production end of May or beginning of June. It's not clear. Is that for a refreshed MacBook Air?
I mean, when you look at the KGI rumors and you look at Mark Gurman's rumors and you look at the stuff that Ben Beharin spoke about, it all makes sense. Apple needs something at the $899 price point to sort of compete with the growing Windows entry level computers there. And they don't have anything but an outdated MacBook Air and an expensive MacBook, and they need something in the middle and a linear successor to the MacBook Air with a Retina display and modern specs is their best bet.
Right.
You know, the question is, are they going to keep the MacBook Air name? Because it's, as Renee says, it's a weird problem that they have, that if they're really going to do an entry level MacBook, if they're trying to compete with Windows machines, they have to offer a hell of a lot more than the MacBook Nothing, which is one of my favorite Mac products ever. But if you're anticipating that someone is going to be walking into Best Buy or someone is with a $600 to $900 to spend on a laptop, you show them the current MacBook Nothing, you show them what you can get in on the Windows side, basically the same sort of usage. You get so much more on the Windows side. People, you don't have to travel with dongles, and yes, it's thicker, but not so much thicker that you're gonna have to throw away one of the magazines you're not reading in your backpack anymore. So the question is, are they going to try to create a more are they going to try to create a MacBook Nothing that is cheaper to manufacture, or are they going to go, for instance, the way of one of the original like white MacBooks, where they bite the bullet, say we're going to have a plastic case, we're going to have to make it thicker than the MacBook Pro because we can't afford to make we can't afford what it would cost us to manufacture something as thin as an iPad at this scale, and we also need to have a couple of for real USB Type A ports on there. So it will give us a lot of insight into what Apple's worried about. If they decide to make something that is a more affordable MacBook Nothing, that means that they're saying, we get it. We just can't do what the Windows manufacturers are doing, based on their lower overheads, based on their need to keep revolutionizing their line year after year after year? Or are they going to say, no, we do want to get that high school student. We do want to get that college student. We do want to get that company that's buying things in bulk for all of their for 100 copies for each of their employees. I don't know how they would do it.
I remember when they announced the new MacBook Pro, they positioned the entry-level version without a touch bar as for everyone who wanted a MacBook Air with Retina. But that, you know, that really, that's $1,299, I think, point of entry. And the MacBook, I think, was originally going to be the MacBook Stealth and wasn't meant to be an entry-level machine. It was meant to be, again, that executive sort of, I want the ultra-lightest MacBook possible. And nothing is fulfilling that entry-level product slot for them.
Yeah,
the Retina. I think the Retina resolution would be really important if it's possible. There's a lot of apps that I literally can't run on some of the smaller apps. You know, there's just not enough resolution. So being able to have more resolution on the screen, even if it'd be hard to read, would be useful.
You can buy non-Retina displays that don't have the quality and the calibration that color calibration that Apple would need or the brightness they would need. So that there are still plans for making super super cheap non-Retina type displays. If you're making a kind of display that needs to go into a MacBook, then you're really still talking about one of the pricier displays on the market. So it would be hard for them to even do something like a MacBook Air right now, I think.
I'm getting a Windows laptop. I should probably say that. It's 12 inches. I'm just checking the... This is the new
HP. Is it the one with the camera and the key, Leo? The one with those?
That was funny, wasn't it? This is 1920 by 1280 on a 12-inch... laptop, pound and a half tablet with, you know, attachable keyboard, Windows style. This is 3x2, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'll have that next week. I'll show you what you just.
It's hard to when you look at HP's product line, especially when you look at Lenovo's product line. That's what they're up against when they're trying to deal with $1,000 or less. We're not talking about.
$1,000.
We're talking about really good machines. I think that. I don't think that a ThinkPad would cause people who are happy with a MacBook to switch or even people who have complaints about the MacBook to switch. But I think it's useful to walk into a store and check out a ThinkPad because these things are they're really like the Crown Vic. What the Crown Vic is to cars, meaning they're not necessarily stealthy or elegant, but damn, do they perform. And damn, are they handy to have around.
It'd be so nice to see some of these models and. Maybe it's just Alex's thought that Apple should just allow Mac OS to be sold on other platforms. Because I don't expect Apple to make 1,500 different SKUs. You know, this is not in there. They're not going to ever make anything that looks like this. But it's a touch screen. If it just weren't running Windows,
it would be so great.
Right.
No, there are so many things that I would love to see Apple. I mean, there are so many PCs that we have in the office that are... much more powerful than I haven't tested the iMac Pro yet, but the some of the PCs that we have four graphics cards in them, and they an incredible the AMD Threadrippers are pretty fast CPUs, and all of those things are things that you really want to see. You want to have that hardware, and then you just want to have it on a Mac OS. I think that. I do think that Apple's going to hang on to it until they've decided that the portable platform at least is going to support mostly iOS. I mean, and I think that the two operating systems are slowly merging.
Yeah.
The real question is whether they can without exposing anything.
Yeah.
There's some point where Mac OS is not going to be valuable to Apple. You know, I don't know exactly when that is.
I'm still yearning to see visible an all-in sign that Apple is as much in love with Mac OS as they are with what they're doing with iOS. And as I've said before, but haven't said it in a couple of months, so I'll say it again. I'm taking really good care of my 2015 MacBook Pro because when it dies, when I finally spill when I spill Dr. Pepper into the keyboard of this one, if Apple has not taken a real major turn away from the direction they're heading with the MacBooks, I will not buy another MacBook. It will be definitely a ThinkPad. There's no way that I'm going to buy a current MacBook Pro.
Just because everybody
is deleting the bezels and adding a notch, right?
Just because everybody in the Mac space probably isn't aware of what's going on in the Windows space. This is the $1,000 HP Spectre. i5, 8 gigs of RAM. It's got a touch screen. This is $1,000. It's 13 inches. This is kind of what that MacBook that $1,000 MacBook would be competing against.
Yeah. And the great thing is you don't get crumbs in that. Not only is it a better keyboard, you don't get crumbs in it, because if you're watching like YouTube and Netflix, you actually just fold this. Yeah. You fold the screen back so that the keyboard is facing away from your mouth. Yeah.
I mean, put it on the table that's covered in popcorn. And
well, yeah. Don't do that. Yeah, that's what. Well,
if there's one thing that I would love for them to steal, Apple to steal, it's not even necessarily a touchscreen. It is a 108. It is that 360 degree hinge, because the number when I'm testing out a Windows laptop, the number of times that I find myself again turning it all the way around and turning it into like a I'm not even there to touch the screen. I just want to be able to read stuff while I'm like having lunch, or even I'm traveling. I have to crank out like 5,000 words a day for 3 or 4 days while I'm traveling. And I really want to do it on something better than a notebook keyboard. So I will travel with a really good keyboard. It adds so much nice stuff to the experience of using a computer. I would love to see that.
I think we'll likely get the iPad version of the clamshell first. They'll just scale iOS to be a MacBook device and it's a attachable keyboard, or maybe it'll have an attachable keyboard, but it'll be much more MacBook like. And that solves the problem of touchscreen. It solves the problem of LTE modems. It just solves a lot of the issues that people currently have with MacBooks, although, you know, with a different operating.
So everything that Apple announced last fall has shipped except for one thing. Can anybody tell me what that one thing is? We got the HomePod finally, right?
Two things.
Yep.
I can only think of one. iCloud Message Sync and AirPlay 2.
Oh, those
charging pads.
Three things. The three things Apple Mac announced in the fall. Three. Okay. Anybody else? Anybody having a four? Anybody four?
The AirPods charging case.
AirPod charging case that goes with this, which rumor says.
Oh, right.
Rumor says this is DigiTimes again. We'll see this month. The charging pad, and of course. The picture Apple showed has an iPhone and an Apple Watch charging along with your AirPods, but you can't charge AirPods unless you get a new case that supports wireless charging. So
this is like one of the few Apple products I can tell you that I have zero interest in. Like that doesn't happen very often. I'm usually like, just send me, like, if Apple just had a subscription service that I just send them a check when they have a new product.
And, you've done that.
And
I
get it.
Yeah.
You know, it would probably be fine. But not this one, because here's the deal, is that I want to know that it's really going to charge. I mean, I don't know how many times your watch has been like, you put your watch. I have one in my car, and what happens is it pops off just a little bit because of that and I'm afraid that would happen all the time. And I wish I had a lightning in my watch. You know, like I don't like the whole magnet thing. You know, the only place I like the magnet is the mag safe, which they took away. Not that I'm bitter.
You don't do wireless charging on your iPhone?
Never.
I do every night.
I want to plug it in. I want to know it's there. I won't even use a charger cable that doesn't make a little click when you put it in. Really? I want to know
use it for the best way to charge your iPhone is still to use like the slow adapter and to do it with a plug, because that does the least cycles and maintains battery health the longest. The fast charging and wireless charging are conveniences. Like if you have a fast charger and you need your phone topped up quickly, or you just have it in the kitchen or your desk and you want to charge it quickly for a few minutes, but both of those take lifespan off your battery. I don't think most humans should ever have to care about that. But if you're someone who likes to micromanage your charge cycles, you still want to go with slow and wired.
I don't like charge pads that are flat like this, because I do find that is a little bit more difficult to be sure that you're charging on them. As you know, I use an easel charger, which works perfectly as long as it's on the easel. Anywhere on the easel, it's always charging, and that's what I use at night. But I imagine there'll be people who, I mean, there is a convenience to having all three things charged. You know, maybe for travel, this would be the right thing. You know?
Yeah. Also, Apple's done it looks like they've done a really good job on the interface for this. There's not on my old Samsung phone. The last time I was using a wireless charger on my nightstand every single day, there's like a little LED that sort of comes on that reaffirms that yes, I'm charging right now. Whereas Apple is the iPhone is actually going to take over your screen for a second with a cool little animation that's impossible to skip to show you to overlook that yes, you've made it correct. I do think that the best way to do this though is not like one expensive super duper charger, but I think the real power of wireless charging comes when you have affordable chargers that are kind of everywhere. Like right now, I'm at the desk that I podcast from. again, back when I my daily carry phone was had wireless charging, there'd just be like a $15 eBay wireless charger right here. So when I put it down, it's charging. There used to be one on the little stand that I have my drink on when I'm watching TV. It just happens to go down there. Not that it's not even an explicit thing. I'm just simply setting it down where the phone belongs. And as a result, I'm not grabbing my phone to go out at night and realize that, oh, that's right, 8% phone. Yeah, too bad.
So I don't see the it's called the Air Power. Is that what that pad is? I don't see it on the Apple site. But they did show it, right, at that event.
Yep.
Yeah. So I hope that they I'll take a look at it if it comes out. I agree with you, Andy. It's probably going to be – did they say what the price would be? It'd probably be, you know, Apple price, which is –
it's going to be expensive. I've heard it's going to be expensive.
I've heard
I'm with you. I have chargers everywhere. In fact, it reminds me, I'm going to get some more.
I mean, it'll be a cool thing to have on your nightstand when you buy one of them. It's
for travel. It's hard to think what I would use it for.
Or for travel, but really, it's hard to overstate how flexible people are when it comes to this is the first piece of technology I'm going to interact with over the course of the day, and it's the last piece of technology I'm going to interact with over the course of the day. When you get to that sort of thing where no, this isn't necessarily a productivity thing. This isn't necessarily a feature thing. This is part of my lifestyle. This is part of my daily routine. This is why people are willing to spend silly amounts of money on a really good shower head, because it's one of those little things that gives you a small amount of reassurance that, okay, everything is okay. I got my dental floss dispenser. I got my charger. I've got everything is okay. So yeah, it's not a big deal to me. So long as for that price, it really has to work great. Like Alex says, the first time that you bump the nightstand and you happen to jostle your watch a little bit off center and it stops charging and you're screwed the next day, that's when people are saying, okay, I've got 8 hours left in my 2-week return plan. I'm returning this thing right now.
Yeah. I feel like for $100, I could get 3 of these Tilt View wireless chargers up and do what you do, Andy. Put one in the office, put one at work. I have one at work.
I think I actually had that one.
Yeah. This is easy because you never, you know, it's on there. And by the way, doesn't your iPhone go blunk when it's, yeah. And there's a green light at the bottom that lights up, but there's really less, I don't find that I'm, you know, waking up in the morning and, oh, shucks, it didn't charge.
I used to, in wintertime, in wintertime when I had my wireless charger, that was a problem because I'd have like a really thick comforter and sometimes I'd roll over at night and the edge of that thick comforter would just brush up against the edge of the table just enough to disrupt a cable or something.
Yeah, that's
and
the
again,
worst.
Knock it off just a little bit. So
yeah, you really don't.
That happened to my Palm Pre and my Nexus 4. So always I just wake up and it was in charge. I think the promise of this technology is that, I mean, one day the big dream is that it'll be in every restaurant, in every coffee shop, in every taxi or car sharing service. It'll just be everywhere you go. So if your phone is low, like in the car, you'll put it down. In the restaurant, you'll put it down. At the table, at the office, someday, you're having a meeting, you'll put it down and it'll just charge.
Yeah, your dream.
Because there are some sites that will there's some sites that have convenience chargers where, you know, there's that little Hydra. Sometimes actually when even take an Uber or a Lyft, there'll be like a little snake out there that says, "Oh, here's a USB-C, here's a micro USB, here's a Lightning charger."
You can't trust them. I mean, there's such a security vulnerability.
Not just a security vulnerability, but I don't know where they ordered this from, and if they've got some Chinese charger that is not like not Apple MiFi certified, it's. Yeah, again, I would never. There's a security problem. There's a safety problem. But when you have wireless charging, so long as you don't have Bluetooth turned on an Android phone and lots of permissions that you shouldn't have turned on, I would absolutely trust that at Starbucks.
I have to admit, I never plug anything into, like at an airport. I always see people plug like into that little USB charger. I'm like, that is crazy talk. Like, you know, you are just, you know, I won't even in our own the car we own, I won't plug it in. You know, it's just it's kind of like, you know, I want to know what is actually interfacing, and I want it to be dumb.
I actually had to like pay for. I was renting a Zip car. One of the first or second times I rented a Zip car, I said, "Oh, great, Bluetooth. I'll use the speakers." And unfortunately, this Ford had the thing. Oh, automatically. Don't worry, we can dial your phone through your contacts. And I actually wound up returning the car late because I was sitting there trying to figure out how to completely like factory reset the factory installed radio to make sure it wasn't getting all of my contacts handed over to the next person who uses this damn thing.
So the MiFi logo has been updated. These are the made for, not MiFi, MFi, made for iPhone, the new logo. I didn't know the old logo.
MFi.
MFI. Is that how we say it? MFI.
Yeah.
And for the first time ever, I didn't know this wasn't a possibility, you can now buy a Lightning II headphone jack. Or what is that?
Mail. Stereo headphone mail jack, right?
Oh, so basically, you can plug your phone in.
Right, exactly. So you can route the audio output of your phone into another device, which is beautiful for like capturing voicemails.
Oh, that's really good news
for using it as an audio source in an arbitrary device.
Yeah, I have lots of devices that I would like to. That have line in that I would like to plug into.
Which is weird because I remember like somebody, I think he worked for Apple, making a big statement about how nobody uses audio cables anymore and they're pointless and we don't need audio cables anymore. Who was that? I think it's some crazy person rushed the stage at an Apple event and went over. Okay, I'm sorry.
I'm still mad that Sonos stopped offering its 30-pin what was the dock. Remember I used to dock my... And then they got rid of that, and they never did a Lightning cable one. I guess you just do it. All supposed to be wireless, right? The modern world.
And is Apple allowing both male and female, or is it just the male out for the cables?
Well, the female they sell. That's the headphone.
They sell that, but can other people make them?
I don't know.
Themselves.
I think for the right price.
Yeah, they've been doing it for a while because they made the splitters where you could split from Lightning to 3.5 and back.
Yeah, in recent times they've expanded the MFI program so that and made for Apple program so that you can do a lot more with USB-C than you could before. You can do a lot more with the Lightning jack that used to be proprietary, and it's just typical Apple of being conservative about what they're going to let third parties do until they've really got the hardware locked down. They really know that it's not going to result in something being set on fire. Which is, sounds like I'm making a joke, but every time that you get one of these like rabid news items about how someone wants to sue Apple because something blew up, it turns out to be some cheap, no-name Chinese charger or something that came in a box or something they bought one of the biggest dangers in my box of cables are the times where I needed a charging cable, didn't have one. I was desperate, so I was at CVS where they have that little bin of no-name chargers, and then it sort of enters the scrum. I have forgotten that this is a crap piece of junk $5 cable and not an actual $15 one, whether you buy it from Apple or from somebody else. You never want to save money on a charger or on a cable. Never.
This is something that will warm the cockles of Christina Warren's heart. She's a big Bob's Burgers fan.
Yes, sir.
The creator of Bob's Burgers has made a deal with Apple for an animated musical called Central Park. It'll be Apple's first animated series, its first musical. And they placed an order for not one, but two seasons.
Two seasons. 26
episodes. Central Park is a story, according to Variety, of a family of caretakers who live and work in Central Park and end up saving the park and basically the world. Josh Gad and co-writer Nora Smith also worked on the series with Lauren Bouchard, who is the...
Yeah.
This is going to be good.
This is going to be really good. Not only because Bob's Burgers is intensely funny, but for really no reason that they're required to do so. Almost every episode over the end credits, they have an original song that they will just simply write for that lasts for 30 seconds over the credits, a new animation for it. They've done a few different episodes where look for an episode named Topsy. Where Gene, the son, writes an entire musical based on Thomas Edison electrocuting an elephant. And you're like, my God, that is a super catchy, wonderful song. So the idea of that, whoever it was who said yes, I hope that they said yes the fastest way they could possibly do it. And I got to say, this is the first. This is how these streaming exclusives work. It's not that people, look back and open the brochure and say, that's a really engaging portfolio of content. It's that, the Bob's Burgers guy is doing a musical series. Oh, I might have to subscribe to Apple Music for that one.
If that weren't enough, are you ready to hear who the voice talent is in this?
It's more.
OMG. Yep. Leslie Odom Jr. from of Hamilton fame. David Diggs, who was Thomas Jefferson on Hamilton. Titus Burgess, who plays the fabulous Titus on the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. He is wonderful. Kristen Bell, who is fabulous from the good, what is it, the Good Earth, the Good Parts, the good Place. Stanley Tucci. Man, yeah. Can't wait to see this.
Amazing voices. It's
great people. And you'll recognize every one of them, and you may not know the name, but you'll go, oh, who is that?
Yeah.
I can't wait.
Well, I think more than anyone else, I think Apple is really just, they are, after a false start, they are, I think that they really are the just deals? Looking for tent poles only.
Yeah.
You know, like
now, this will
really
be made
like
by 20th Century people. Fox Television, who, and I guess Bouchard is under contract with them.
Yeah.
So the real question that comes up, and we've been every week we've had a new announcement like this. The real question that comes up is, where can we see this though? What's this going to be?
Well, I think we're going to find out in 5 years. Remember that I'm not even joking. I mean that I really think that all of this is really going to come together when it might be an Apple Watch sort of migration where they know what they have to do next, but they don't know where they're going to end up. But once they figure it out, they're going to have everything in place to make that thing work. I know that unfortunately podcasts are recorded and saved on servers everywhere. So I know that I was kind of negative a year ago or 2 years ago about Apple becoming a content company, but they've been making a lot of really cool moves. And if you look at them as saying, hey, we've got Apple Music and we've got three crappy shows, one that you're kind of interested in and one that you really want, that doesn't sound impressive. But they're making all of these moves that are intended so that in 5 years' time, they could be like a Hulu. They can't be a Netflix, and they wouldn't want to because there's already Netflix. But in terms of having a really good stable of shows that have enough high-profile people, not like some of the Netflix movies where they just threw some money at a famous name who decided to take a script that they rejected 4 years ago and make it on the cheap, but essentially saying, I will let you have all the meetings that you've had where with network executives in which they have been nothing but giving you trouble and giving you financial trouble and wanting to have their hooks into your career, come to us. We are desperate for someone of your caliber. That's they're building a really good stable of content, and I'm really keen. I'm doing more now that, well, of course, it's snowing 12 to 18 inches today. But you know, if there's one thing that keeps me on the bike, that keeps me, you know, having like vegetarian meals when I really just want to go across the street and get a pizza, it's because I want to live long enough to see what this turns into. Apple's doing something really interesting here.
Question I have
that's not my only reason to live. I want to assure you. I'm just saying that it's, you know, it's a reason.
It's a good one.
If you are a fan of old Apple memorabilia, you ought to know a guy named Hap Plain. He works at a Lexus dealership in Monterey, but he's also a collector of vintage Apple gear, and he's selling quite a bit of his collection on eBay. A Mac Portable, Apple's original laptop, the 170, Apple's first PowerBook, a G3 iBook, and a lot of prototypes. Steve,
these are the moments where I wish I was filthy rich.
Yeah.
Yes.
Some of them are a little pricey.
I would have a library.
$10,000 gets you a clear prototype of the Apple Macintosh.
I want the clear Apple 2C. Yeah. I so want that.
Steve Wozniak's classic cinema display. Let me go look at this actually.
Yeah.
Let's see what these prices are by now. They're probably a little bit steeper.
I used to be paying a lot of money per month to store all of the really cool old Macs and stuff that I bought. I would buy at the MIT flea market on a regular basis. It is a sickness. It's almost like having a boat because yes, you can afford the $30 for this Mac SE limited edition, but it's going to cost you $90 a month forever to keep it. $15,000 for a clear Mac Portable.
That's pricey.
If $15,000 didn't mean much to me, boy did I, boy would I spend that. If I had
$99,000 for the Lisa.
99. Yeah. Oh, that's a joke price.
No, there was somebody on eBay. I bookmarked it because I was fascinated by this listing. Somebody was had a factory sealed new inbox unopened. New old stock Apple Lisa mouse that they had something like a $13,000 or even a $20,000 buy it now for. And I would be fascinated to see if there was anybody in this world who was eager to pay that amount of money. All you need is one. All you need is one person.
This is kind of amazing. A prototype for the Apple iPad, first generation, $4,000. $3,000 for a Mac Mini. prototype, these prototypes.
You wonder where he got these.
He's just been hanging around. These are all legally acquired, according to Gizmodo. They just
you get hanging you get around. You get in at the right time where there's you just simply put out ads. How do certain people have like original Star Wars Stormtrooper masks and original TIE fighters? Because there was a time where someone who worked on that show in 1984 had that in their garage and was shocked that someone wanted to spend $1,000 for it. So and this is exactly the time. Speaking of the MIT flea market, you see how these things move in cycles. When I started going to the MIT flea market as a kid, like vintage radios, like the really cool ones, like the Art Deco style, like the church cathedral style, were going for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars. And then there was like it's over a 3-year period, the really beautiful Art Deco radio that might have been used as set dressing in The Thin Man that would easily sell for $500 was now going for $100. Then 30. And then the last time I saw radios of any kind, I was seeing a table full of just a sign saying, I will sell it for $5 if I think that you will love it and treat it with respect. These because people who grew up with radio were dying off. It's us losers who are now in our 30s and 40s and 50s who are showing nostalgia for the Apple PowerBook 100 that we had as a kid or the Macintosh portable that we couldn't afford as a kid. But hey, now we've got our kids are out of the house. We've already explained to the kids that college is so expensive we can't even afford to send you. But now we've got $40,000 that we saved that we're not going to be spending on your college education. Hey, let's have the clear translucent Apple IIc. So this is why all this stuff is now being pulled out of the woodwork because there's an enormous amount of money available for it. Now, no one will buy it 20 years from now because, again, we'll be start to die off. But it's a wonderful thing to see. As someone who doesn't throw things out, as someone who just finished cleaning out a house after 10 years and saying, oh, I would have thrown that out 5 years ago, but now it's collectible. I'm keeping that.
Here's the best deal of all, $400 for Steve Wozniak's cinema display, complete with the FedEx label and Steve's address on the back. Yeah. $400. It's a deal.
Let's take John Scully autographed PowerBook 100.
No, thanks. No, I don't want that one. Let's take a break. We're going to get your picks of the week, gentlemen. That was from April 5th, 2001, that cinema display. So it's not exactly late model technology. We'll get your picks ready in just a second. But first, a word from Rocket Mortgage. Folks, if you are ready to buy a new house or refinance your existing house, you got to know about Rocket Mortgage from what is officially now the number one lender in the United States in every measurement, every metric. Of course, number one, according to JT Power and customer satisfaction for 8 years in a row. But now, even number one in terms of volume, they are big. They are the guys, Quicken Loans. And what I love about them, I'm so happy for their success. Dan Harmon and his crew just really love technology. They've done so much to revitalize downtown Detroit. And they want you and me and all us geeks to have something, a loan approval process that fits the 21st century. They realized, you know, Dan said, this is like going back in time when you get a loan. You go to the bank, you have to put on a tie or, you know, nice dress, and you have to fill out an application, 20-page application, and you're still not done because then you go home and you got to go to the attic and find pay stubs and bank statements from years gone by. And it's just crazy. And all of that, you still don't find out for weeks, sometimes months, if you've been approved for a loan. Now, fast forward, the 21st century here, Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. It's an entirely online experience, about 8 minutes from beginning to end. Actually, you can shorten that right now if you go to rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak and get the account set up and get started. That'll just take you a few minutes. Then when you see a house you want or you decide I want to refi before rates go up, you can do this. Oh, just like boom. Just like go fit. Just answer a few questions you already know the answer to. No going to the attic, nothing. Just because they have relationships with all the financial institutions, you just give them permission and they will get all the information they need and crunch the numbers and minutes later give you an answer. No wonder they're the number one online mortgage lender. And this is not just in volume, not just J.D. Power. Inside Mortgage Finance said so, too. It's fantastic. Based on your income, your assets, your credit, they'll crunch the numbers. They'll offer you the loans you qualify for. You choose the term, the rate, the down payment. You're going to apply simply. You're going to understand fully every step of the way. No paperwork. You do it all on your phone. And then you're going to mortgage confidently because you're working with the best. RocketMortgage.com/MacBreak. Really a great solution. Bookmark it, or better yet, just get the process started so that when you need it, it's there. They're a really great company offering the perfect way to apply for a mortgage. RocketMortgage.com/MacBreak. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. We thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support of Mac Break Weekly. Mr. Inako, your pick of the week.
I really like the interface of this one. This is a utility for the Mac called Unclutter. It is technically a clipboard and file manager, but what it is for stuff that you want to have handy, like you have a file or a text clipping or something, what it does is it uses the top of the screen as a drag area. So if you have a file that you want to keep tabs on, meaning you're going to have to paste into 100 different emails or use all the time, you can just drag it to the top of the menu bar. The Unclutter sort of window shade comes down, and there's a drag area where you can drop it. If you have images, text clippings, things like that, there's a lot of boilerplate that you happen to use, you can drag it into a clippings area. And the part that I find most useful is just a place you can take quick notes. So many times I've got BB edit documents. I'm down to BB edit untitled document number 412, because when I call somebody to make an appointment, or I'm calling to get a price quote again on movers or some housework that needs to get done, I just remember, oh, that's right, she might give me numbers or phone numbers. That's the place where I just have a quick scratch pad. I think it's a really interesting twist on the basic user interface. I would like to see other apps think about this. When you talk about services that need to go across apps and across the entire Mac experience, I think it's really, really super interesting. It's $10, but there's a free trial if you go to unclutterapp.com instead of downloading it from the App Store. I have not bought it yet. I've only installed it about a week and a half ago, but I've used it enough that I might have to just pay the $10 out of simple decency, because if I found it so useful.
Very cool. Renee Ritchie, pick of the week.
So I have a tip this time more than a pick, and it follows on. Joanna Stern did an excellent report for the Wall Street Journal, where there's all these people. I have family and friends and even workmates who are convinced that Facebook was spying on them and using the microphone, or Instagram the microphone to listen to them, because you would say something and then all of a sudden you get ads for it. But as Joanna and some other people have done, they've gone through and it's found that they're really good at sort of coagulating or annexing all of these other data sources. So you have the data that you get through Facebook and the Facebook Pixel, and you have data that they get through supermarket chains and all these huge data aggregation companies, and they put it all together and they can get an incredibly accurate picture of who you are and what you want. And because they're not always clear about where that stuff comes from, it can feel creepy. It can feel like they're literally following you around the internet. So one of the writers on iMore, Joe Keller, put together a really awesome article on if you are bothered by this. I mean, some people like the idea of having really highly tailored advertising. Other people do find it super creepy. So if you're one of those people, he goes through how you can opt out, not just of the Facebook tracking, but of the tracking from the major aggregators like Axion, Epsilon, Experian, Oracle, Quantium, and KBM Group, and how you can do settings in the iPhone to limit tracking, and how you can use plugins on other devices to do it. And I know, I know this is happening. It's one of those things where you can be aware of it. And so sometimes you see an ad and just be shocked, going, how did that get there? And if you've experienced that sort of feeling, even if you don't end up implementing this stuff, just going through the process gives you a feeling like you have a little bit of control back over your destiny, and you have a little bit of a tinfoil on your hat, and you can choose to exercise it when you want to. And that sort of takes away the stress of it happening. At least I found that for me and a lot of the people that I shared it with.
Very nice. It's always good to know how to protect yourself. Great information.
Yeah, and again, some people won't care, but if you do care, then you should know how to speak about it.
That's kind of my feeling. I don't care, but I understand if somebody does care, and you certainly should have the tools and the ability to control it yourself.
Well, I was shocked. I was going to Ottawa to visit my sister, and I opened Instagram, and it said, use OpenTable to reserve your Ottawa restaurant tonight.
That's crazy.
And I never said I was going to Ottawa. I said it in one phone call to her and one text message to Serenity Caldwell, and I had no idea how I did it. And it turned out that I think 3 out of the last 5 years, I'd gone to Ottawa and posted in Facebook from Ottawa, so it assumed that I'd be doing that again. But it took me like 30 minutes to figure that out. And in that time, I'm like, no, it really is listening to me.
Knowledge is power.
Wow.
Yep.
Alex Lindsay, what do you got for us today?
I got two quick things. One is, we were just talking about chargers. I got a new charger, and I'm constantly upgrading chargers. I spend a lot of time on the road. And I pretty much stick now into the family of the Anker. So Anker now has a 10.
Look at that.
That's 10.
Holy cow.
Harmonica.
You can put it in.
What's
the
total wattage that thing can...
So total wattage is 60 watts or 12 amps. That means that up to five of these is going to get the 2.4 amps per per channel. But what it does mean is that it, so it'll start going down if you start adding more than that. But one of the things for me is being able to, you know, I come in a lot of times from traveling, and I'll go into a hotel room or wherever. I'll sit down. I just want to plug everything in, and I want to walk away and know that it's all, like, I don't want to have to trade around and figure it out. I know that if I plug in more than five, I'm not going to get the, you know, the fastest charge. But it's mostly, I just don't want to have to think about it anymore. I just want to walk away and have it done. So it's got a little switch. There's a couple important things when I look for chargers. The switch doesn't matter. In fact, I think that that's the only thing I don't like about it. Because once I plug it in, it does have to have a figure eight on the back, because I lose my figure eights, and I usually can steal them from TVs. So
from the TV. Well, that's good.
I do. I don't
now I know why my TV never works. It's some
exactly. I never use TVs in hotel rooms, but I do use their figure eight to either plug in my computer. Like, if I don't have an adapter in Japan or something like that, or not Japan, but in other places, I will just pull it out of the back of the TV and put it into my Apple charger. So anyway, so the figure eight is important. And then a light on the front. So there's a little light on the front. I don't believe in buying chargers that don't have these little lights. Because you end up with this whole, like, you plug it in and you plug something else in and you can't figure out why it's not charging. You need to know, is it getting to this? And then is it getting to the next thing? So I won't buy a charger without a light. And so that's the Anker. The other one I have to admit is Lisa's fault. My other recommendation, Leo, is the Pop in a Cob.
I love this. Pop in Cobs. Oh my God, did she give you some?
She did. She gave me some when I was on Screensavers on Saturday. And it is so...
Isn't it the best?
My kids loved it.
I thought it was kind of a gimmicky... So it's popcorn on the cob. And I thought, this is the kind of thing you get at the ye old country store, and it's just terrible.
Right.
It isn't. It's the best popcorn you've ever had. I don't understand how.
And the thing is you put it in a paper
brown,
bag.
It comes with the paper bag included, by the way.
You throw it in the microwave, and so it's microwave popcorn that isn't radioactive.
No, you know, like, it tastes better than popcorn you pop on the stove.
Oh yeah. Because I have one of those little things with a little
you wrap it up in the paper bag. Now she butters it before she puts it in the paper bag.
I don't know if that's a good idea. I did it the first time, and then I had a bag that was all covered in butter.
Right.
I probably put too much butter on it. So I was just like, I just pop it, and then I add the
butter
later.
Melt the butter and add it later. Exactly.
And I guess they say that a lot of farmers markets are now putting these in, so you cost a lot less. You can get them for like $5 for $6
or something
like that.
Lisa bought 100.
Is this like bone-in ribeye, Leo? Does it increase the taste?
It is actually the best-tasting popcorn you ever had. I think the brown bag is part of it. It doesn't have any of that weird industrial oils. She thinks it's best because it leaves the husk on the cob. So it just pops off the cob, and the few kernels that don't use just kind of brush them off the cob. You throw the cob out, and then you have this popcorn, and it's really good popcorn. What's also good is it doesn't make a mass quantity. So it's just right for one setting, you know, one sitting. Otherwise, I will overeat popcorn.
It is so
it's
good.
It's too good.
So anyway, so that's
very all.
Did she say fun to make as it is to eat?
Like
Jiffy Pop.
It's really quick. What is the brand name on that?
I think it's called Pop and Cobs. And there's a lot of people that make them, but the one that I would get. Pop and
Cobs. Because this is poppincobs.com. I don't know where she found it. She might have seen it on Instagram. I think it probably is an Instagram ad. But she bought so much of it, that's why she's giving it away. It's the best popcorn I've ever had.
I admit, if I bought a lot of it, I would not give it away. It does look like it gets much more affordable, because I think when you buy a handful of them.
If you only buy two.
This is the only place I've seen where you can buy like 10 or 15, because they're like $4 each if you buy them on Amazon.
How many did you buy, Lisa? She bought them on Uncommon Goods. That's a catalog. And I was wrong. I only ordered the 25. You didn't? Oh, you only bought 50 of them, not 100 of them. Okay. We only bought 50. Let's get that right. But look, they have a wholesale division at Pop and Cobb's, so maybe you ought to go there and just arrange to have a supply. She's been getting out samples.
But the price is good. The 10 pack is much better. It's for $15.99. I mean, that's now starting to get competitive with your regular microwave popcorn, and it's way more healthy than your regular microwave popcorn.
It tastes
a lot of fun.
Better.
My kids
it tastes
it was the best thing.
It tastes like you popped it in the popper. It's phenomenal. Yeah. And if you don't want butter, well, then you got dry pop. But we put a lot of butter and salt on it because we're
and
bad.
It tastes better than hot air. I mean, it's
much
not like
better.
It's empty. Yeah, there's something about it that's really good. The only popcorn I like better than this is in Zimbabwe. They make this. They roast like regular maize and turn it into popcorn, and it's like this the most gnarly popcorn ever. And that's probably the only one that I've had that's better than this. So it's cool.
Can I just, as long as we're talking about popcorn, I still think my former Mac pick of the week, the stir crazy popcorn popper, is still tops. It brings the best popcorn that I've ever tasted.
So much, Andy. I bought two of them after your recommendation, and I've thrown them out. One broke. It gets hot butter everywhere. It's a mess.
Okay,
it's the single worst way to make popcorn, Andy.
Okay, I first of all, I don't melt butter in there.
Well, you're supposed to put some in the lid, right?
Well, if you want butter, right? Exactly. That's clearly not going to work. But I have never.
Well, that's supposed to work that way.
If you want butter that way, if you want to have to like carve butter off of everything, I prefer to. The popcorn in my house takes the place of buying. Even when Super Bowl week, and you buy 10 bags
popcorn.
Of Doritos for $3.
Yeah.
It's not the popping popcorn in oil is not necessarily the healthiest thing ever. But I don't salt it. I just it's great. But I've had the same popper for a couple of years. It still works great. It the only thing I wish it were immersible. For cleaning.
You can't clean it. It's
yes,
the worst,
you can.
It's the worst thing I've ever seen.
I'll give you your $23
got this
back.
Cheap little this little metal. It's like a coat hanger that spins around slowly, does nothing.
That's all you. Oh, no.
No, this is the one I like. This is the Whirly Pop. That's a real popcorn pop.
Put on your AR glasses because I need to virtually reach out with a leather glove, smack you in the face, and go Aaron Burr on your Hamilton butt.
Oh, man.
I will not sit here and let the stir-crazy popcorn popper that has given me so much pleasure during movies over the past 2 years be besmirched. Sir, I will see you at dawn.
I'm sending you some Cobb's. And by the way, after you're done with the Cobb's, they have other uses.
You can throw them at children.
Yes.
Get me more popcorn.
Because you really sold me on the stir crazy. I got one.
You don't have to. I'm sorry you didn't like it. I'm glad that
you're
I'm glad
stirring
that,
it
something
crazy
I
wrong, Leo.
You bought it wasn't a 20. It was the $22 one and not like the $8,000.
Yeah,
whatever.
It was inexpensive. That was the good news. But yeah, I don't know. I'm just now. Maybe I'm doing something wrong. I just think this is not a great design for a popcorn popper. Yeah. And do we really want another appliance on our counter just to pop popcorn?
If it makes a big bowl
now
of
that we
popcorn
have, now
that's
we
as
have
crunchy
Cobb.
And fresh as the... Maybe there's some nostalgia because my memories of popcorn are mom is taking me and the kids to see the movie. So, of course, we're making like big like Roche Brothers grocery bags full of like stovepop popcorn. And we were simply walking in, not even pretending to hide them because we have the guys, damn it, we're entitled
to
home
mistake bake. Is using the built-in butter well.
See, I would guess that.
Use the built-in butter well.
I have never used the built-in butter. Even when I had a hot air popper, I would never use the built-in butter well because I will not, as great, and this is saying something, as much as I like butter, butter is wonderful. Butter is great. I don't like butter so much that it's worth afterwards having to clean out
the dump scoop. What a mess. And the idea is you pop it and then you turn it upside down and then the popcorn's in the bowl. But if you use the butter well, the butter's in your lap as well, which
that's
is
big,
not.
That's a big.
But then it's hard to sift the whole butter. The whole it's hard. To, I always did the butter just in a glass or something.
Well,
you know,
and the thing is, once the popcorn's popped, the stir just ineffectually spins around. It's not moving anything, so it's not mixing in the butter or anything.
What you're getting at is that means it's you. That's you've just praised the metal stir because it has done its job. There are no uncooked kernels at the bottom because the stir was there. You are insulting a piece. piece of metal that's done nothing but work hard for your best interests.
Well, mine stopped working entirely. So
now, but what's the most most importantly, what do you put on it other than the butter? Like, once you add it,
butter and salt, what more do you need, right?
For a coffee.
Get the cobs. You don't need any implements if you have a microwave. It works very nicely.
That's a problem because I don't. I didn't take the bread machine because I got it 10 years ago and now I've figured out how to make it myself. I didn't take the microwave because of the sous vide. I just don't use it for. I used to use this. The microwave used to be for. I can take a half hour for a break for dinner. Then I have to go back to work. I don't want to mess with food. I was only for the past year and a half. I was only using it when I had forgotten to like clean out a bowl of beans and the beans had like dried all hard and caramelized. I need to boil water in the bowl to loosen them and clean them. And so now I've decided that perhaps I will clean the bean bowls like promptly, and therefore I can keep this appliance. I for the first time since college, I do not have a microwave oven.
Wow. You are very Amish. Thank you.
I put it to you that if it was not in Julia Child's kitchen in the 1970s. I agree,
100%. You have several springform molds, no doubt, for your aspic. Yes. Andy Iannacco, you'll find him at the Chicago Sun-Times and at CWOB.com. That's where he hangs his many hats. And, of course, each week here and on the Material Podcast where he talks about Android in the same animated fashion. It's amazing. I don't know how he does it.
I have too much love to be contained within simply one platform.
One operating system. That's at relay.fm. Thank you, Andy. Thank you to Renee Ritchie. His work is at imore.com. And, of course, that Vector podcast is a must listen. Or watch now. You got video now, which is awesome. imore.com/vector. Thank you, Renee.
Thank you so much, Leo.
Have a wonderful day. And Alex Lindsay back to work in the nation's capital. God only knows what he's getting himself up to. But I hear there's an opening in the Secretary of State. That's what he's been doing out there. Yeah. Pixelcore.com is where to follow him. And by the way, they're on Patreon now. Go to patreon.com/pixelcore and you can become a Pixel Core member once again. They've opened it up for membership, and that's fantastic.
Yeah, and we're going to be doing actually a stream from DC, so people can see a little bit about that on Thursday. Nice. And then Fred, who was on Screensavers, is going to do a Q&A with our Patreon members on Friday. So it's an action packed week.
Very nice.
Oh, and finally, by the way, the virtual version of our sale is going on. So people still go up and sign up and say they want to be on the mailing list. I think like 800 people want to buy stuff from us.
Oh, so, you're gonna blow it out to the bare walls. I got that. I'm so happy about that EX3, and you were so nice. You included the case, the battery charger, extra memory. I mean, that is. I have an ENG package. That's awesome. Did you get a check for that? Have we paid you for that?
I don't know. I'll have to ask Shannon.
Tell Shannon if I haven't, I'll come down with the cash.
Okay, sounds good.
I'll have it wrapped in a rubber band. Thank you, Alex. Thank you all for joining us. We do Mac Break Weekly Tuesdays around about 11 a.m. It's right after iOS today, so it varies. Maybe 1 p.m. Pacific. Now we're in daylight saving time, so that's 1800 UTC. Note the new time. You could tune in and watch at youtube.com/twit. That's true, but actually YouTube and all of the various ways you can watch live are featured on our own website, twit.tv/live. So that's probably the place to go. Pick the stream that you like the most. You can also participate in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. Lovely bunch of people there chatting away. It's always nice to see Emily the Strange and Vetman and Synapse, Amon Ra and Virgil and Scooter X and Goodly and Toad Sloth. They all have such strange names. Describes them aptly in almost every case, I think. If you're not watching live, always can watch on demand. Get your audio and video at the website, twit.tv/MBW, or subscribe wherever podcasts are distributed. If you want to join us in studio, Nathan did. Nice to see you. He sat through the whole show, I'm proud to say. All you have to do is email tickets at twit.tv. Now, my friend, I'm sad to say, time to get back to work, 'cause break time is over. Bye-bye, everybody.